Hello, welcome to another of these Crucible podcasts. Today we have three Scottish Crucible alumni who've all gone on to have very interesting careers. They're all from different years, all had different journeys through academia and beyond. But what role did Scottish Crucible play in getting them to where they are now? Why did they take part in the first place? And looking back, how do they rate their whole Crucible adventure? Joining me are Professors Janine Illion and Stephen Wallace and Dr. Laura Wyness. I'm going to start at the start on how each of them found out about Crucible, why they decided to take part, and where they were in their academic career when they applied. Janine Illion, you took part way back in 2009.
Yeah, that's right. I took part in the very first Crucible in 2009. I was very curious. It sounded extremely interesting. I came into it very much from the kind of interdisciplinary angle, and I thought, well, this is a nice challenge. Why not give it a try? That sounded exactly like along the lines of what I wanted to do, be interdisciplinary, meet people from other backgrounds and work and be creative together.
Where were you in your academic career at the time?
At the time, I was at the university in St. Andrews, hadn't got my a lectureship yet, but I had a kind of 5-year position that basically promised a lectureship at the end. Was relatively new to St. Andrews and really kind of finding my feet and my own direction in my career.
Useful compass. Okay, Stephen, same for you. You're a bit more recent, I think, 2017.
2017 for me, quite similar to Janine actually. I was at the start of my independent scientific career. I just joined the University of Edinburgh on a lectureship. I'd been there for about 6 months. And to be honest, I was sort of at that stage where I was just transitioning from being a scientist as part of a really large, bustling lab in the US. And that transition into independence, I sort of found myself sitting in a room by myself, sort of thinking quite prolifically about my future of research. And then the Crucible came up as an opportunity that was advertised by the Royal Society of Edinburgh. And I just thought it was a really brilliant opportunity for me to start building my scientific and wider networks in Scotland, whilst also sort of thinking about my future research plans and some of those slightly nebulous skills that I guess you have to quickly develop when you transition into these sort of positions like leadership skills, management skills, etc. And the Crucible program just seemed like a really unique opportunity to really do all of those things quite simultaneously.
Laura, similar story for you. You were 2014.
Yes, I was 2014. I was working at the time as senior research fellow at Queen Margaret University. But after I finished my PhD, I'd worked at Trinity College Dublin for a couple of years and then at the Women's Health Council, which is a government agency in Ireland. And then I worked for a charity, the British Nutrition Foundation in London for a couple of years before going back to academia, so to speak. So I was a senior research fellow at the time that I saw Crucible being kind of advertised. It sounded like a great training opportunity to learn from experts and from other researchers in different universities, as well as I thought it would be great to kind of improve my professional skills and develop personally as a researcher and hopefully accelerate my academic career.
And how did it match up to your expectations? And what I'm particularly interested in is, can you remember if anything came as a surprise to you? You thought you were going to get this, but you also got that.
Well, I wasn't really too sure what to expect, but it definitely enabled me to see the bigger picture of the possibilities. I think that was such a great benefit of it. I think in terms of maybe the unexpected, being part of the Scottish Crucible had a huge impact on my career direction. It helped me realize the possibilities and alternative career pathways, not necessarily academic pathways. So 2 years after the Crucible, I actually left academia and started my own business. So it kind of just opened my eyes to different possibilities.
You actually think Crucible helped you not only in terms of thinking about academia, but in thinking of leaving academia?
Yeah, in a good way, I have nothing against academia, but I just felt it wasn't the right environment for me personally. And I think the Crucible definitely gave me a lot more confidence, as well as, the science leadership training. It was kind of, it gave me a lot more kind of leadership or encouraged me to be a leader in my own field. For example, I became one of the Scottish reps for the Association for Nutrition. And one of my passions is getting the title of nutritionist, a protected title in the UK, which it's not at the moment, and it's creating all sorts of problems with misinformation and science and nutrition information not being accurate. So kind of gave me that confidence boost.
Okay, we'll talk a bit more about where you are now in a minute. But Stephen, similar for you, can you remember looking back what surprised you in a good way, I hope, about taking part in Crucible?
Yeah, I think when I was applying and I was asking people their opinions on the Crucible program, everyone was like, just do it, but it's really intense. So the intensity I hear from a lot of people is quite a surprise for them when they go on the program, but I was sort of pre-warned a little bit about how intense the 3 days were going to be. But I think the surprise for me was expanding my sort of scientific boundaries, I guess, of where I was working, the sort of creative opportunities that exist at the interface of my field and other fields which I would have assumed maybe before that point were not possible. I found that really interesting, and I think that's something that the Crucible really uniquely develops. A good surprise, I guess, was that, I really look back on my time in the Crucible as really the point that I found my confidence, I guess, as an academic scientist, where I stopped, worrying so much about, what I couldn't do in this new crazy job that I had, and instead, really started pushing forward and realizing the opportunities that were ahead of me, especially in Scotland.
Yeah, there's a sort of Large Hadron Collider analogy here, isn't there? You kind of smash all these interesting things together, and you can't be sure everything's going to generate something, but every now and again, something spins out of it that turns out to be amazing.
Yeah, that's a great analogy,
I just thought of that. Right. Janine, it's a long time ago, but do you remember what you expected to get and what surprised you about participating?
I definitely remember, and I think that's one of the important things to say in a way, is that I very much remember how I felt after the first session in Edinburgh at the time. I, was, as I said, very curious about the event, and I thought it's going to be nice and interesting, but I hadn't expected the vibe that came with it. And that crucible feeling was very strange terminology perhaps, but this kind of very supportive and constructive atmosphere that makes the crucible for me. So it's not, in addition to whatever the others have said, and I absolutely agree that it has also contributed to my confidence and has been brilliant in that context, but also having this kind of vibe of bringing all these people together who just want to create stuff together is something I'm not going to forget, I think. So that was very special.
There's a sort of acceptance that people come to have, isn't there? That actually you can go and talk about your subject, your area of interest to anybody, and you're very unlikely to encounter anybody going, no idea what you're on about, not interested. There's all, and they're going to be looking for a connection. And when you start to find those connections, you start to build potential collaborations.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's very well said. Yeah, somebody is welcoming your ideas straight away. Very
Okay, so let's
positive thing.
fast forward to today. Janine, you're now head of statistics and chair in statistical science at the University of Glasgow. So what does that involve on a day-to-day basis?
In my role as a head of statistics, I'm kind of the senior person in the statistics group within the School of Mathematics and Statistics. So one half of the school. I'm looking after the day-to-day business here in terms of teaching and research, but also, of course, support people in their careers. Have to have, kind of think strategically with the head of school and the other head of subjects, or the head of mathematics. But then, of course, on the other hand, I'm a normal academic, so I'm teaching myself and I'm doing research.
Yeah, so you've got to acquire a quite a considerable skill set beyond the mathematical.
Yeah, absolutely different skills. You can be a really good mathematician or statistician, but have no management skills at all. But so I'm enjoying that, in particular, the kind of the support of people and the strategic side of things.
And you're leading a whole bunch of research groups, and I think you've also written the current standard work on point process modelling. Now, bear in mind, I've only got A-level maths, and some people listening to this may not even have that. Can you give us a 1 minute guide to point process modelling?
Yeah, I can do that. That's of course my favorite research topic. So basically, I'm dealing with statistical models here that try to model the locations of objects and events in space. So, for example, the locations of trees in a forest, or the locations of earthquakes around the world. The idea is to describe these patterns that these locations or points form in space, or space and time. Or in particular, actually describing and modeling the geometry of this. And this now sounds very, very abstract and theoretical, perhaps. And this is exactly where my work starts in a way, because until very recently, this was a very, very theoretical statistical discipline. It's been my mission basically to turn this theoretical work into practically useful work. I transformed that discipline into a discipline that actually can be used.
So you mentioned, for instance, about earthquake modelling. Is there anything in that to get us towards the ever elusive ability to predict where and when earthquakes are going to happen?
That's the idea, in a way, is to get a better understanding where and when earthquakes are happening. But the earthquake work is actually particularly interesting in the context of Crucible, because the person I've been working on with earthquakes is actually somebody I met at the Crucible that I attended in 2009, and we are still collaborating on this. So this is my kind of one of my longest standing collaborators.
Stephen, so, your background's in synthetic organic chemistry. You've fairly recently become Professor of Chemical Biotechnology and UKRI Future Leaders Fellow at the University of Edinburgh. I think the full title's a lot longer than that. This is all about finding better, less fossil fuel dependent ways to make the molecules and chemicals we need?
Yeah, absolutely. I lead a research team here of about 20 scientists, roughly about 10 chemists and 10 biologists. And yeah, we're working with about 25 different industrial companies in the UK and worldwide at the moment, trying to design new bacteria that can valorize waste materials like agricultural waste, you know, sometimes sewer waste actually, plastic waste, and to transform them into chemicals that we rely on every single day, like medication, food, perfumes, cosmetics. All of these compounds that I think people don't realize exclusively come from fossil fuels right now. And that's particularly, I think, interesting for medicine. People don't realize that most of the medication they take is actually the same material as goes in their car. It's derived from the same petrochemical feedstock. So yeah, defossilizing the chemical industry and cleaning up waste at the same time using microbes.
I think you're right that a lot of people won't realize about that, but I suspect they also won't realize that we're at a level where we're engineering microbes.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, in many ways, you know, this technology is quite new, but in many ways, this technology is quite old. You know, before the petrochemical revolution happened around, you know, 60 to 100 years ago, we made everything via biotechnology. We fermented, you know, sugar to make drinks and alcohol, etc. So it's really, I see it as, yeah, using modern molecular biology, but at the same time, sort of going back to more sustainable industrial practices that actually we've done in the past.
If you're in all these different projects with all these different large organizations, how on earth do you work out how to partial out your time?
That's an extremely difficult question, a very topical question, actually. I think, you know, I love what I do. So, yeah, I find the time, it's a bit of a hobby for me. I find it pseudo recreational. So they always say, you know, find something that you love doing and then convince someone to pay you to do it. So that's very much what I feel like I'm doing right now.
Okay, that sounds very positive. Now, Laura, I'm guessing that when you took part in the Scottish Crucible, you could not have foreseen that in 10 years you'd be out of academia, as you said. You'd be an award-winning freelance nutritionist. You're a podcaster. You're a published author. You're regional food tourism ambassador for Edinburgh. This would not, I suspect, have been in your mind 10 years ago.
Absolutely not, no. I started my own business about 8 years ago now in nutrition research and communications, and it's grown from there. So what I do now is, one of the main areas I focus on is helping perimenopausal women looking for dietary advice, because that's a huge gap of nutrition information there. So I was getting a lot of one-to-one clients asking questions on how what they can eat can help with symptoms and maintain their health. So it kind of developed gradually over the course of a few years to writing Eating Well for Menopause book. And I got that published down the self-publishing route, which is a journey in itself. And also I do online courses, CPD courses or training courses for fellow health professionals on Eating Well for Menopause, because it's just such a neglected area of science, and translating what we know from science into practical messages. So that's one area. And then the other area, as you said, is regional food tourism ambassador role, which came up a couple of years ago. It was a new initiative from Scotland Food and Drink, and I jumped at the chance because one of my passions as well is trying to change the perception of the Scottish diet and improve what we eat in Scotland. And I thought that would be a great opportunity to do some work in that area to promote a healthy Scottish diet. So part of my role with that was two projects that I did. One was the startup Food Connections podcast, which is all about connecting people with the food that they eat and hearing from farmers and food producers. So hearing the truth about how we make food and the hard work that goes into making our food, and dispel a lot of the nutrition myths as well on different foods.
I was going to say, because you've got to do two separate things there, haven't you? You've got to try and change the reality, but you've also got to try and slay the myth.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's a lot of miscommunication and myths on social media especially. And I do feel bad for kind of farmers and primary producers, because they often are made out to be not doing a good job, but actually it's quite the opposite. They care a lot about the land and how they produce food in a high quality way.
And there's also, I think now there's the Scottish Eat Well Guide as part of all this.
There is, yes. I'm very excited about that. So you might have heard of the UK's Eat Well Guide, which is kind of the national dietary advice on what is a healthy and balanced diet. But there have been some other versions, like the vegan version of it and the South Asian version, but there was not a Scottish version yet until last month. So I developed the Scottish version of the UK's Eat Well Guide, which hopefully will inspire people to enjoy a healthy, balanced diet using the many nutritious foods that we actually grow and produce here right in Scotland. It is possible to have a healthy Scottish diet. I had thought naively, possibly at the beginning, this would just be a simple stick some Scottish foods on the Eat Well Guide and that's it. But it was a huge, hugely complex task to try and get the right foods represented in the Scottish Eat Well Guide and find a place for haggis in amongst all that.
Of course, haggis. I mean, I love haggis. Particularly listening to all that, it sounds amazing. But what role do you think Crucible has played in getting you to where you are now? Because you're not in academia, you're doing all these amazing things. You might have got there anyway, mightn't you?
Possibly, but maybe a bit slower. But I think the Crucible had a huge impact on that. Again, the communications aspect was huge. I mean, Vivian Parry's session on the media during the Crucible training was absolutely fantastic. I mean, I was already interested in communications, but that really hooked my attention on just how important it is for scientists to effectively communicate with a wide audience and use different types or different ways to communicate with different types of people, engage with the media. I was actually just on the Nine, the Scottish News last night, talking about vitamin D. And soon after doing the Crucible training, I was invited to speak on nutrition communications and in the media at the Institute for Food Science and Technology's annual conference. And so it's just really encouraged me to use different media platforms. And I do that all the time in my role now. I'm on social media, I do Facebook Lives, I do podcasting, and I'm a Veg Power ambassador as well, which there's nothing better for enhancing your skills than I was doing an Eat the Rainbow campaign for primary school kids, and I had to do pieces to camera talking about different coloured veg whilst throwing different coloured veg in the air, talking about its key nutrients, why it's healthy, and a fun fact as well, all whilst there's a classroom of kids waiting to get into the room that we're filming in. So I had 10 minutes to do 7 short video clips. So talk about pressure, it was a good experience. So I think communication is key for scientists.
And also, I think the Stephen thing, that if you make the pressure fun, if you rebadge it, you can find it more enjoyable. Stephen, how much is Crucible helping you on a day-to-day basis in terms of collaboration, communication, or anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what Laura just said there. I was nodding so much during when you were talking there, Laura.
Which is great on a podcast.
Yeah, I know, exactly. It's not very helpful. I totally agree. I think the communication skills that Crucible taught me, specifically Vivian's session, it really became very clear to me very quickly that, you know, getting bogged down in the detail of what we do, and that's something, you know, scientists, you know, should be doing, and basically was what I was trained to do up until the point where I joined Crucible. But dissociating yourself from that, finding a top line narrative as a way to engage a wider audience in your science and ultimately generate more impact from the work that you're doing, was something that I was really keen to develop more. And Vivian and I actually sort of engaged a lot more after Crucible as well. And I was invited last year to give a TED talk on this subject of biotechnology defossilizing the chemical industry last year in Vienna. And I found myself during the preparation of that really just always leaning back on what I'd been taught in Scottish Crucible. And so, you know, that experience wouldn't have been possible without that sort of bedrock of training that I got during Scottish Crucible in 2017. So yeah, I totally agree, Laura, yeah.
Janine?
Yeah, I mean, I can absolutely agree with what Laura and Stephen have said. So I don't want to repeat this in a way, the communication, the importance of communication and confidence. I said earlier that I'm in a role kind of in between the theory and the very applied end of statistics. And I think the Crucible has given me this confidence to actually see that this is an important role. So, and that's the thing that I'm particularly good at. Previously, it was always, I didn't have the confidence to think that this was just important, because the kind of theoretical part seemed always so very important and so much, much kind of cleverer. And I always thought what I'm doing is just the boring applied stuff. But I have now kind of seen that the role as a communicator between different groups of scientists is actually an important and an increasingly important role. And I'm very kind of happy in this role, and I'm able to also kind of teach others to kind of identify when they realize that they're actually really good as the in-between person in a way. So that's one of the take-home messages I got from the participation in the Scottish Crucible.
Finally, because we're running out of time, I mean, Janine's already mentioned that she's still working collaboratively with one of the people from her original Crucible. I wondered if the other two of you still have connections going on. Stephen?
Yeah, we had a project that finished quite recently, but a project that lasted a couple of years after Crucible. And because of a conversation that I had during Crucible with a marine biologist who was based in Edinburgh at the time called Heidi Burdett, who had been studying sort of marine coral and their fundamental biology. And she mentioned to me once, I think it was at lunch or over a glass of wine in the evening, that there had been a microbe that had been found in some of her coral that produced this chemical that's called dimethyl sulfide. And from my background in chemistry, you know, I used dimethyl sulfide in my lab days all the time, and it was currently and still is produced from petrochemicals. So over that conversation, we were like, oh great, you know, if this microbe can make this chemical, why can't we engineer it to make more of this chemical and then create a sustainable bioprocess to sort of completely decouple the manufacture of this industrial product from fossil fuels? And that's what we did, and work sort of has been going for a couple of years now. We're in the process of sort of trying to intensify and scale this up, but it was a project that wouldn't have happened, you know, had we not been having that discussion at Crucible.
And this is the kind of serendipitous stuff that Crucible really helps with. And sometimes you feel that, why isn't there more of this in academia, bringing people together who would never normally meet? Because every now and again, you get something like this.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, real science is discovery, not intent. So yeah, we should be having more of these discussions for sure.
Laura, it might be harder for you given that you've stepped away from academia, but do you still have connections out there to your fellow Crucibleists?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was Ewan Campbell who I met on the Crucible train and I was on. He was my very first podcast guest. He was my guinea pig, so to speak, talking about honey and beekeeping. He's a his area's biologist. He's a biologist and studies bees. So I had him on explaining how honey is made and just the background to beekeeping, which was a fascinating episode. But yeah, I echo Crucible again was great at just making me realise how much you can learn from other disciplines and not working in silos. Because as a nutritionist or in any field, I guess, you tend to go to your nutrition conferences and speak to other nutritionists, but actually going to different types of conferences. I went to the hospitality one recently and got a completely different perspective on some key issues, and going to business networking groups. I think Crucible has just made me realise, talk to everyone and make connections in different fields, because it can be really useful, especially if you're entrepreneurial or having your own business. Talking to people from different backgrounds and perspectives just makes you realise what's possible or can form really useful connections.
Really usefully connected with me today, that was Dr. Laura Wyness, freelance nutritionist, author, podcaster and regional food tourism ambassador for Edinburgh. And you also heard from Professor Stephen Wallace, who is Professor of Chemical Biotechnology and UKRI Future Leaders Fellow at the University of Edinburgh, and Professor Janine Illion, who is Head of Statistics and Chair in Statistical Science at the University of Glasgow. They are all Crucible alumni, Scottish Crucible alumni, and there are more elaborations on collaboration and more alumni illumination in the other podcasts in this series, spanning Scottish Crucible and European Crucible. So go and check them out and have a listen whenever time allows.